I know that in the previous weeks there have been some discussion on rates, so I hope to be telling something different, at least, if not new. The other thing that I'm glad is that, that this discussion has been taking place, because a few years ago I would be almost left to be alone to talk about rates.
So you have to tell us where this is. You can't.
This is the observatory of Padua, my institution.
Thank you.
So this is the center is our, and on top of that was built the observatory 200 centuries ago. So why to come for supernovae? I don't have to convince you, but this is a plot, an histogram of the distribution of supernovae with the morphological type of galaxy for the different type of supernovae. And this simple plot of what is seen in the list of supernovae really tells a lot, because you compare it with a plot of the star formation rate in galaxies from H alpha, for instance, and you have a static peak at C galaxies, like core collapse supernovae type 2 and 1bc, and this already tells that the progenitor are massive, and type 1a, that's not true. The nice thing is that for supernova rate is that they make it, they are linked to the star formation history through basically simple things, the EMF and the progenitor scenario. Then we will discover it is not that simple. The things I just shown was the count of supernovae in a general list of discoveries, but what we really want to have are rates. And to have rates, you need to analyze the data of some search. And this is the work I've been doing 10 years ago. And I was trying to combine data. And this is still the number which are, for the local rate, are still the number which are used today. And it is a pity, because they are used on photographic and visual searches of maybe finished 20 years ago. But coming soon are the results from the Weidong, Jesse Lehmann, Alex Filipenko, lot of search. And this will make a really major improvement. And I say, first things, these are the reason why this improvement, and then basically they are, I would say, in order. So the first important thing is this much deeper, 3 to 5 magnitude deeper. So everything is selection bias are reduced. The detection efficiency of the search is more accurate because of the CCD against the photographic plates. And there is a more detailed supernova spectral typing, especially for 1bc, this is important. And the statistic is better. That's not amazing, but it's still a factor 5. And what I was doing while waiting for... Weidong presented the preliminary results from this and these days, and is saying, well, the previous rates, the one you published, are not that bad. Probably within a factor 2 they are correct. And that's, would that mean my... If I went to guess 10 years ago, that would have been my error on the rates. But let's predict what I expected. So, the lines here are the rates for supernova different types with galaxies. And on top of this, I put now the discovery rates in the last 5 years for nearby supernovae, and normalize to the galaxy type and the luminosity of the galaxy in the nearby universe. And by this, I will be able to guess what is wrong with the previous, the 10 years old rates. You know, I expect that the boxes here should be always lower than the yellow line, because rates account also for the supernova which you are not seeing, the one which are not. You account for the fact that the sun is in the up for some time, so on. If this comes higher, like for 1bc, that means probably that the rates are underestimated. And indeed, we are finding more 1bc from the rates than we expect from the actual series that we expect from the rays. And this means that I would say that this is a clear indication that the rate of 1 BC, my rate, are underestimated by a factor of 2. And this is easy to understand, I think, because at the time when I did this computation, 1 BC were very little well classified, so there are problems with that. So, let's say, local rates seem to be correct within a factor of 50% to or less, but for type 1 BC, where possibly there is an underestimate, close to a factor of 2 probably. So let's go to the discussion which has been around on type 1A progenitor. From the list of supernovae, already in the 30 or 40 years ago, the people noticed that they were exploding all type of galaxies, also in elliptical galaxies. So they say, if supernovae type 1A are there, this was said first by Vandenberg, Berthaud in the 60, progenitor of type 1A are long-lived, long-mass stars, because they are, of course, in elliptical. Then, Uhler and Tinsley, among others, in 30 years ago, say, well, but there is a high rate of type 1A in spiral. So most type 1A supernova comes from short-lived stars. This was already 30 years ago. And solution? There is a wide distribution of delay time. This, among other, Greger and Thini put a paper on this. You see, this is a single degenerate scenario, and they say, well, there is a, with this distribution, we can account for this fact. Then what happened? And we lived with that up to, say, 2-3 years ago. Then 2-3 years ago, Dalen and Stroger measured the rates at very high redshift of type 1A. And because of this decline at redshift, say, above 1, they say to explain this, you need to have a delay time between the Barthol star formation, which is something here, and the time that the type 1A begin to rise, which need to be something, say, 3-4 billion years. So, and they say that the best fit is for with a narrow Gaussian for the delay time centered depending on 4 or 3 degrees. And they, however, they do not comment anything about the fact that locally we have evidence that some supernovae need to be for type 1A need to come from a young population. And so I think this motivated the Mannucci to revive something which was already there, because you know what we published 10 years ago was that the rate of type 1A per unit luminosity is constant from elliptical to spiral. That's a constant per unit luminosity. On the other side, we know that the mass to light ratio is higher in elliptical than in spiral, so the rate per unit mass is 10 times lower in elliptical, so that's already there. But it seems they need to be revealed. So Mannucci put the rate actually for unit mass doing this conversion, not statistically, by galaxy per galaxy, using the B minus K color to get the mass to light ratio. And so it showed these things which was already known. And so from this fact, you need the fraction of at least most supernovae in local spiral are from young progenitors. So locally, this is the problem. Let's see. Combine this, take this, this motivated, you know, Mannucci to elaborate a new model, not say model, a new sketch for the delay time of type 1A, which is this red line here. And he say with this distribution of delay time, we can fit the rate per unit mass, still time as a function of the color, B minus K color of the galaxy. And this is true, but it's also true that you can fit the same relation, they are the black dots, with the whole delay distribution which comes from different stellar evolution modeling. So you can fit this using the model of Manucci, the model, which in this case are the one of Laura Greggio for different kind of progenitor Taquinet scenario, single degenerate. You cannot simply distinguish between the different models, but you really can exclude the narrow Strogler delay time, because that will not have the high rate in blue galaxy. What is the real reason for Filippo Manucci to insist, let's say, with a model where you have many progenitor coming from very short delay time? The reason is the high rate of type 1 supernovae in radio galaxies. So this is the only real constraint at the moment. And the data are this one. Since the data are coming from my database, I would say that first things, they are not so solid. So because you see the number are small, we are talking about what is in total less than 20 supernovae. You divide in bin, then there are selection effect and so on. But still, you have an excess of possibly a few, say 5, 6 objects in the bin of radio loud galaxies. You see that the radio loud galaxies are much fewer than radio quiet. So, and if you work out with the rates, it comes out that the rate is a factor 4 higher. So, I would say that these data need to be confirmed. But still, as usual, suppose this is true, let's see what comes in after that. And the two scenarios to be proposed, to explain this enhanced supernova rates. One is the jet-induced accretion scenario, and the other is things that there is an enhanced star formation after merging episode. That's the first. Scenario was proposed by Capetti and Livio. They start from observing that some type 1a supernova is aligned with the jet inside the radio galaxy. And from this, they elaborate a model where the wind is pushed in on the white dwarf and we're going to increase the mass. It needs a very fine tuning of parameter. So very difficult to explain the statistics. And also, the number of events actually really aligned with the jet axis are 1, 2 cases. So it seems this is was motivated by first observation, but that doesn't seem really to work.
Is this a plot that motivated the cow in the foreground of the nuclear power plant plot? I think it wasn't it?
Manucci proposed a different way to look to these things. They say, let's take that the radioactivity is galaxy is powered by merging episodes. In this merging, you have enhanced star formation. From the time you know that about 10% of the galaxy are radio loud. If this is true, and you expect that all galaxies are the same, you expect a cycle for these episodes, which you can guess is, an episode you should suppose to run 10 to the 8 years, and you have 10 of such things repeated in time and separated, let's say, by some times, you know? And in this different episode, you make at most 3% of the star in ellipticals, because if you do more than that, you will change the color of the elliptical, so it cannot be more than that. And it needs to be distributed in time, because if you do that today, then we change the color of the same. So it needs to be along all the history, which doesn't look that different from what Tommaso was showing recently. And these things will burst a formation and trigger radio activity. So you need to combine this with the delay time distribution, which is like this, which has a lot of power at very short delay time. Otherwise, we will spread these things you will not see an effect different in radio loud and in radio quiet, because we are saying that all radio loud and radio quiet are experiencing the same history, but they are, we are just seeing a different time. So if this was shorter, let's say 10 to the 9, the difference radio loud and radio quiet will disappear. So it needs to be short. So you need to combine these two facts.
So do you remember from the Minucci plot, I'm just looking at this from the discussion we had with Chris on Friday, with that large of a burst at 10 to the 8 years, what fraction of white dwarfs they need?
It is...
It must be really large.
It is large.
Fraction of white dwarfs.
I was gonna say, but look at this plot, right? So yeah. It shows time after star, so within 100 million years, they've got that big bump.
And so you're asking
the,
what
a fraction of the white
the whole distribution doesn't make what are you thinking for the radio loud in general?
I was looking at that distribution.
But the distribution doesn't make the value doesn't change. The integral of these things, which is then the fraction of word, the fraction of dwarf which go to supernova 1A.
And in that time, what was the fraction of white dwarfs at that time that was going into 1A? It sounds like a reasonably high.
Maybe
just check it. Maybe. Let me show you another way. So, but anyhow, they fit these things.
Well, we can't see that.
Oh, sure. That's the fit of the, let's say, it is the rates with this model, this burst, they fit the, this is the paper, anyhow, so. But I will point what is my, the main problem from my point of view. The main problem is that if you now take the whole list of elliptical, which of supernovae in elliptical, there has been 58 supernovae discovered in elliptical galaxy. If you are saying 10% of this galaxy are radio loud, how many type 1A supernovae are connected with these things, then from the prong channel you expect something like 15 of these 58 being due to this fact. You can simply compute from the fact, you know, that the rate is 4 times higher and so on. Then, should we see some core collapse? Because if there is a burst of star formation, there will be... So this, you can work these things out in different way, and I choose this way. I do the ratio of the core collapse to 1A in spiral, and I take this as a, must be a lower limit to the ratio after starburst. And if you do this, you see that you would expect to have found, say, 40 core collapse in ellipticals based on these things. If the EMF is the same, of course, in the burst star formation, that would be out there. How many supernovae ellipticals have been found, or in general, how many core collapse have been found in ellipticals? 3. There are this one mentioned here, and they are also discussed a lot because this is actually classified in 3 as A, so not clear. This is in an interacting pair, so the supernova is very nearby here, but you know, it's never really clear. This seems quiet elliptical, so, and but let's say it's always 10 times lower than you would expect. So, if this is true, in this scenario, the only way out is you need to truncate the EMF, not to make core collapse, which you need a very fine tuning because you need to put the mass limit exactly to make the maximum of type 1A and none of the core collapse, otherwise we will not work. So, how comes out from this? First things, as I say, the observation need to be confirmed because that's not so solid. The second solution, which one may think, is actually it's not true that radio loud galaxy are the same population of radio quiet, only in a different time. But actually, they are really different objects, and they had, for instance, a burst, say, 3 billion years ago, which raised the type 1A rays, but today the core collapse already disappeared. So I think you need to...
Well, but one other thing is that if you look back at the radio loud, radio quiet kind of thing,
yeah.
Right, the right there.
Okay.
The, you know, the air bars are really big. It could be much shallower.
Yeah, that's the observation.
Yeah, you get this chi squared per degree of freedom of 0.62 because you can arbitrarily tune the thing on the left to match the step on the right, when in actuality a straight line almost matches.
Yeah, yeah. This is how the observation which needs to be really confirmed. And as I say, that all this which come after that is assume that you believe the point basically without error bar, because otherwise you... So, the conclusion...
I was just going to say, there's one way of hiding all those core collapse objects and ellipticals. I don't think it works, but most of the star formation would be nuclear star formation, and it's hard to define a supernova in the
so. But if it is true, may work, but the same time point A, since they are coming from short delay time, I mean, in this scenario, will not have time to move from the star formation place, so that this time point A should also be confined in where the star formation occurred, and either the same way. So let's move to supernova ray evolution, which is cosmic time. Well, a few years ago, I thought that this was, almost 10 years ago, I decided that this was a nice field where to move to do something. And for that, you need lots of telescope time and so on. So I got involved in building a camera for an instrument. The instrument was the VST 2.5 meter telescope, which was supposed to be installed in parallel in 2002. The dome is there. But this happens in 2002. The mirror which was sent to Paranal arrived in this condition. That's being, you know, I don't think I ever seen something like this. And happened is that the mirror has to be built again and is now being delivered in these days at Paranal, the telescope.
So what happened actually? You can't escape us.
They claimed an accident during the transportation.
Up to the mountain?
No, in the ship.
In the ship.
And there was an accident which was never really clear, and the mirror had to be moved quickly. And they got with the force of the... and they got in the corner of the box.
Oh,
that's the news. So, well, that means why I haven't done what I was supposed to do. The camera, by the way, is ready at ISO since 1.5 years in a box waiting for the telescope. And so meanwhile, we decided we need to use what was available, which was a 2.5 meter telescope at La Silla, which is a good instrument. The problem there is that you need to compete with other programs, and we were able to have a number of nights, 25 nights at 2.2 plus 13 nights at ISO VLT, which is good, but it turned out not that large for compared with other sites. So this is the field of view. We did all the things other people was doing, so take difference of image, detect object, take a spectra very good, and look for supernova. The steel search compared with other one, I was interested in rates. Most other people was interested in type 1A as distance indicators. That I put less constraints on the selection, especially for the spectroscopic follow-up. And so the good things of steel search is that there's unbiased candidate selection, and I was aiming to have both 1A and 6-core collapse rate. We try to have a well-defined galaxy sample like the Sloan approach to a photometric redshift of the galaxy. We made a very true detailed error analysis, and we work out on these things of extinction. We'll come back on that. The cons are that we had only 4% of the supernova spectroscopically classified. We had no U-band for, which is not for supernova, but for photometric redshift, especially for nearby galaxy, not having U-band is a major problem with photometric redshift. And the redshift range is somewhat limited. What we got out of this search, we had about 200 candidates, in general candidates. Of these, 60 were found to be AGN because of long-term variability. We had direct spectroscopy for 41 candidates. For 40 other 44, we had a later on spectroscopy of the host galaxy. Photometric redshift for all the 40,000 galaxy. Extinction. You know, you often read in the papers that there is no problem of correction for extinction for type 1A. I like always to show this picture of two type 1A in one galaxy. One is the 1.1 magnitude, the other has 9 magnitude of extinction, so even type 1A can suffer for extinction. And actually, the average extinction for the well-observed type 1A supernova is about, say, 0.3, 0.4 magnitude. This is the one we know.
That's your sample, or where's that?
No. This is the local sample of everybody.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
And the same thing for core collapse is 0.7. So these are the averages. So what we have done to allow for this, to account for this in our computation is to make a model of the distribution of dust, galaxy, the spiral, put the type 1A distributed in the disk, more or less, plus a Galois component. Description of this is in the paper by Riel and Patat. And with this model, we produce a distribution of extinction for different supernova population, different types, selected observing band, redshift, and so on. And we tune this to reproduce the locally observed average absorption. So, the things we need to fit these things is the distribution with redshift of candidates, type 1A and core collapse. Instead of other people was taking these things and divided it into redshift, instead we decided to do these things. We took a smooth function of the rate with a 1 plus z at some power, and we fit the two parameters, the rate at the average redshift and the power of the 1 plus z dependence. So these are the maximum likelihood fit from the distribution and the parameter. And let's see what's come out. So let's first start with the core collapse, supposed to be easier. So these were the measurements available before. This is the local point, these are the two Dalen points. This was one, our result, the preliminary result from this search will be superseded by this one I present here, but I show here just to show how to compare. So the new measurement is this. As I say, instead of putting different points, I put the 1 sigma confidence level of the region which are allowed by the fit of the... So it extends for the redshift range where we add the data. And of course then it hurts when you go out, so it's not, right? It's not more significant. So. But it seems it's quite consistent with the data. Local and high redshift, the 1 sigma is okay. On top of this, I put the star formation history deduced from different paper. You see here the references. There are many now. You have one new star formation history every day. So I took some extreme just to have an idea of what is going on. You know, here there is only one parameter to have the two scale matched, and is the the EMF doesn't really count, actually, because as soon as the same EMF is used for supernova and for the conversion from luminosity density, or alpha emission, or infrared emission, and star formation rates, doesn't really make a big difference what EMF you use. What you fix is the lower and upper limits of the mass range for core collapse progenitor. Here I put 940, and you see that the point remains lower. That's some of the most used, that is the red line by Hopkins and the Bacon 2006, which is the Cole and Twan 2001, and so on. It's one of the most used And you see that that this is much higher. And to get the point at this, the rates here, you need to restrict the mass range for progenitor too much for what we know. So, I mean, I think that this is already 9 to 40 is already tight enough. If I go, 12 to 30, which is what is required to fit here, the problem most people would not agree.
No, wouldn't that be still fine?
Okay.
I don't think.
Well, we have some evidence, from the progenitor of type core collapse, which is at the lower limit for that. So, well, anyhow, let's see. Suppose the people were claiming that here there is a problem because of this mismatch. I would say, since of the dispersion star formation history, I am not sure there is a problem with the supernova. If the problem is the supernova, one thing is, this comes later, so I don't know that one. One problem can be extinction. As I told you, we do the model for extinction, but we can model only one what we see, and there seems to be many supernovae in the nucleus, for instance, of Starbird galaxy, which are unavailable to any kind of direct search. You can only see in radio or much later, so you see only as remnants. If you try to make an estimate of how much is the effect of extinction, now the empty point here are the measurements not corrected for extinction. The filled are the measurements corrected for extinction as we have done so far. And the one with the black here is if you suppose that extinction is much higher, the optical depth is increased is increased by a factor of 5, I think, from year to year. So it's rather an upper limit of what can imagine for extinction correction. So you see that the systematic of extinction can be very large. But still, I would say there are problems also with the star formation histories. So, Type 1a, this is what was known 5 years ago. There were these 2 points by Penetol and Torrey. This is the local rate. And you see the point, and the top of the point, there are models which are coming from the star formation history of Hawking's background we have just seen. And the two different delay time distribution from model of Laura Bajor, they fit nicely. Of course, you have 3 parameters, which is just a fraction of system you can put there, but the number comes out reasonable. Not anyway. Then we had many new measurements a couple of years ago, and especially these high point. I would say that there has been much emphasis on the decline here. But I think more alarming for me are this higher point here, because the statistic is very good for supernova. Here, the statistic is so low, you see also the error bar. You can think that this point is wrong. But it's very difficult, unless you do something with the systematics, to put this point so high. So because of this, Strongler and Stolger put this model, which is this one, which is the delay time. This plot is 3 gigahertz. And you see, again, it fits up to here. Then it declines much slower. This is, I think, it should have been emphasized. You cannot if you want to have such sharp decline rate here, which almost exactly the decline of the star formation rate, you have to have very short delay time between progenitor. Otherwise, you will be moved later on. And so this was an argument against the adopted model, which has not been so much emphasized. But now we have the new measurement of the area here, which you. Possibly too light, but you may guess where it is. So the green point is the point I was putting now. The blue are the one by the Sloan, by the Legacy Survey. And you see, it is amazing where we got on this point, exactly almost there. It's almost really too good. And you see also the evolution we get from that includes very nicely this point here. And it is a low redshift, so we cannot say anything about this, but it seems to confirm the legacy thing. So it seems to confirm that we have evidence for a much shallower evolution type 1a rate. And on this I put also a few other points, models. I put on top of that the Mannucci, is a black line, and in a rather extreme model of Laura Grigio, very wide, double degenerate, just to see where one can stretch the late time distribution. And you see, yes, we possibly can exclude this model, but all the others are not constrained by the observation we have now.
Before you move on, now you do have agreement, statistical agreement, with these points from Barris and Tanri and Zalem that are just above your data, data, and the models, right? But you know, they do seem to be a little bit higher. And then, of course, the other
this is the problem,
the problems. I'm just wondering, do you think there's a problem already starting here?
Yeah, I think so. Because I think it is consistently then is something in the data which...
So Andy has some comments on that, right?
Well, yeah, that's all the same method, and most of those are photometrically typed. I think all of them are photometrically typed, which are dominated by... So, like I said, so-called photometric typing, which is not, not rigorously done at all, right?
Well, sorry, I know, I have to defend because my example is 60% photometric.
Yeah, but it all depends on the method you use.
And the reason, the problem is that you need to account, here I put only the area here, shadow the area, only included error by the statistical error, Poisson distribution. We worked out the statistical error due to the fact that it did not classify supernova zone. And it is more or less similar to this. It adds to this. So if you can account for the fact there is an error, of course. You can account for that. I think that it must be something else. Unless they were very generous, including everything was buzzing around.
They did, right? They went
factor two.
This is
same sound.
Anyhow. Yeah, I don't know exactly what they did wrong.
So
the white points there are the photometrically typed.
Yeah,
right. So that's so you can see here the discrepancy.
The things I want to show here that is really, all people now is saying whatever model you use. Here you use the Scannapieco-Blisten model for fitting, or here Laura used his model. It doesn't really. It first is not constrained by the observation, which model. Second, you need to ignore some of the observation that is not good.
Yeah.
No, but I think to be fair, right? It's only the legacy survey points that are really starting to cause tension.
Not true. I would say that that's been told before. When you get this point here. Is the planetola 0.5 are 42 type 1a supernovae spectroscopically classified.
Okay, thank you.
And then, and there is no comment in the paper about this discrepancy, which, I mean, you get many reasons of explaining why it's wrong, but you should have told something. So, yes, the legacy is confirming, I think that's putting something out. The other thing I want to comment here is this. In this paper, Guillaume Blanc and Laura Grigio are putting a preprint, I think they already submitted, but I'm not sure, these days anyhow. They show with that they adopted the star formation history makes more difference than they adopted the late time model that you take for type 1a. So, you see here, these are different star formation which are quoted in literature. If you take the blue line or the black line here, and this is the blue line, this is the colored one, so the black, and here is the Charlie and Elbas, and this is the blue. You see what the difference make on the expected rate evolution. So the conclusion is that with the type 1a rate, you are more constraining the star formation history at the moment than the delay time distribution. And the last things I want to comment is this. So, you know, the Dalen approach was saying, if our data are correct, the high redshift supernovae are coming from all the progenitor, 3-4 billion years. Manucci is saying the color, or the rate with color nearby the local universe shows that a good fraction of type 1a local are from young progenitor. And whatever model you take from the one we are discussing these days, whatever, even the Manucci one, it actually is the model predicts the reverse. The local, these are two lines, the dashed are the fraction of type 1a supernova with a late time larger than half a billion year. And this is for the one shorter, so to say, the prompt component, if you want to call it, the solid line. This is redshift, and you see locally, you have the fraction of prompt component is from 10% to 30% in the most favorable case, which is the Manucci one. And high redshift is the reverse, of course. You have all the model we've been proposed doesn't really address the observation by Dalen. So basically we are ignoring, and we may have good reason, but we are ignoring that. The other things I want to say first is that maybe we should not fix on any specific number, because, you know, it is true that if you take a limit of 1 giga year, and you see, what is the fraction for a given the late time distribution? What is the fraction of supernovae which are coming from that? Is the 25% for Manucci, is 2% for a single degenerate standard scenario, less than 0.1 giga year. But you see, they're already at, say, 1.5, which you have that the Manucci or the single degenerate scenario produce basically the same things. So 1.5 giga year is something that they need, is a number that is able to reproduce, you know, the rate in spirals, the average in the star formation. So what I want to say is that the Manucci extreme model is only required because of the radio loud and their interpretation of the radio loud activity, and not for any other reason, not rate evolution, not color evolution, no other things.
So the conclusion. One point about this, the most local 1As are from all progenitors, is that this is...
For volume. Where old is greater than point half a billion year. Well, if you think this old, so that's why they're putting this table. What do you want for old?
What's old?
Yeah. This comes from the supernovae ellipticals, right? That locally, essentially. Is that what
Half of the old stars are in spirals.
Sorry?
Half of the old star population are in spirals.
No, also in spirals. Well, let me stress again. It means what you want to say that is old. Because if you take half a billion year, which is a very close limit, then even in spiral, I would say that most of type 1a supernovae in spiral are older than 0.5 billion years.
Yeah, that's not that old.
Yeah, okay. And that's why he's putting all this number here. Now, if you go to see 5 billion years, 2.5, you see what is the fraction depending on the model. And you almost have half and half is 2.5 billion years.
But and you also know that in chemical evolution, I mean, that was the other point Evan and I tried to make, but it doesn't seem to penetrate, which is that chemical evolution constraints tell you the same thing.
Okay.
Which is that...
Yeah, sorry. But it's true that what everything is missing here is that...
Yeah, that's right. But I think that was the other thing, that the prompt piece can't be too prompt, because otherwise you totally mess up the metallicity evolution.
So I just put the conclusion there. Which is, the first thing, there's a possibly inconsistency in the calibration of the star formation of the core collapse supernova rate. I say that this because it's claimed in different papers. I would say I'm not still convinced, but if it's true, from supernova side, the problem may be the extinction correction. Today, in regular determination, systematics is more important than statistics, because statistics is improving, but we seem to have many, as we have seen with the land data and our, so the systematics is a problem. Star formation history gives uncertainty in the rate prediction, as large as the Delisle function, actually much larger, I think. Most of supernovae, I had to put it this way, most supernovae in local universe are from middle age, so not, and all current scenario predicted IRS progenitor are young, so we have actually no one single model being proposed which can explain the very old progenitor IRS. So I'll stop here.
You about the radio loud versus radio quiet in terms of what are the physical conditions that are genuinely different there? And they both have massive black holes, presumably. So is it simply that you have more material in the vicinity of a radio loud?
I think that the radio people like this scenario of repeated merging, you know, for prompting the radio emission. They do not need the star formation aware, so they only need the gas around, so there's not the connection, isn't it?
Well, it's a very interesting thing. Nearby, there are only two galaxies where we can really resolve X-ray sources near the core. One of them is M31, the other is M32, and they both have the super soft source, within a few parsecs, or 10 parsecs of the core. Why is that? Now, neither of them is radio loud, and we don't know why they're really there, but one possibility is tidal stripping by the black hole. So you might imagine that if the difference between radio loud and radio quiet is simply that you have more gas and more stars near the galaxy, and it's not necessarily newly formed stars, but stars that, you know, maybe were there already before some merger event or something like that, then tidal interactions with that central object, with this material that happens to be around in radio loud galaxies, but is not there in radio quiet, can influence the kinds of physics that creates type 1A supernovae. It can influence the binaries. It can strip.
Yes, I think that this way, the point can be, the point can be exactly this. I mean, from one side, Manucci was suggesting all elliptical the same, and the radio loudness is events which occur in any elliptical regularly, say, sometimes when there is merging. And if you take this approach, I think you miss, that's giving you a lot of trouble. Because of to explain type 1A, maybe it works for other things, but instead you may think that the radio loud are already a selected population, which is in the line what you're saying. The selected population has already, you know, gas around which is available for getting inside. And there is already a powerful engine to power the radio loudness, so they are already a selected population, which said possibly starburst history, which is different from the one of the story of starburst, the star formation history, which is different from elliptical, general elliptical. That's going to help to rise the rate eventually.
I guess what I'm saying is that it doesn't really matter. You know, I'm not specifically worried about whether it's a different type or a different stage, but just that if there happens to be more stars near the central black hole, then there's more opportunity for interactions with that central black hole. It's possible that some of these interactions, you know,
I understand, but
I don't have any particular opinion about, you know, their relationship.
Somewhat in the direction of what Livio and Capetti is working, looking for the radio engine, for the nuclear engine to power the accretion in some way, or the merging of the white dwarf. So.
Possibly, but it would be kind of a statistical effect. It's just a higher probability in that environment, and it might fit in with some of the weird things we see locally.
Sure.
Yeah, along the same lines of the radio loud, radio quiet, the example you showed, the radio loud example you showed had 91BG in it. Is it possible to make comments yet on what the luminosity distribution is as a function of radio loudness?
No, of the supernova, you mean?
Yeah.
No, not at all. The statistic is too low for having really information. You know, we know that the type 1A in elliptic are in general fainter. We cannot really distinguish between the 91BG in particular was a one faint, so in principle it would have been nice if it was a bright one. But so I don't think that the statistic is good enough.
It may be related to what Rosanne was saying or not, I don't know, but there's this observation by Madrid et al. In the last year of the nova rate.
Yeah,
that's in the Livio also, yes.
Yeah, the Livio's also in that. And so the result is that the nova rate in the core of M87, which is a radio-loud galaxy, is, I don't know, an order of magnitude higher or something like that?
Well, I guess that's in Virgo. The Ferrer-Rezzi paper got the same rate, I thought, as there's a Ferrer-Rezzi paper on M87, which got the same rate as what you get for M31.
But this was right in the core.
The problem with being right in the core is that none of these type 1A, of this sample, are really in the core. So if they are there, we are missing because the search cannot. Which I think today, with the CCD data, is difficult to miss even in the sample.
Okay, so it's not relevant, but it's still a really interesting observation.
Sure.
It does say something about the nature of the type 1A.
I wanted to say in the Livio papers, I remember right, they also find the nova long digest. They claim the single degenerate probably develops a long digest.
But you need a fraction, you need to explode almost, I don't think, you need an efficiency.
Yeah.
A long deject, which is 100% or over.
Yeah. But I have a question for my own culture. When we talk about dark energy and so on, how far is the farthest supernova we actually observe? On a good redshift?
It is 1.7.
Only 1.7.
Only? Yeah. You can try to do better.
I mean, of course, there are no rates at 1.7.
That's the highest beam. They have two objects there, isn't it?
One or two.
And at 1.5, how many objects do we have?
Well, that's the one or two. Like it's the same beam.
It's the same beam.
The same beam.
Basically, the 1.7 was just by chance in the deep field, and then the 1.5 is in their regular survey. Although
you need to spend about $3 billion of your tax
money.
You gonna spend it for good things?
Yeah. I was just going to ask about Lars is here too. I mean, Lars, what I would get from kind of evolution is that something like 1/3 to 1/6, the type 1A rate is about 1/3 to 1/6 of the type 2 rate, which would mean that there would be something like one in every 150.
Yes.
Yeah, one out of every 150 stars, not one out of 50.
The Minucci result was 1 out of 3. It was 1 to 3. It was the Minucci ratio. Core collapse rate was 3 times the 1A rate.
You still observe the rate.
That's what I'm saying. That's from the
Minucci.
From Minucci.
That's reasonable. That's over the galaxy's history.
No, but the point I was making was if you have this large, if you demand that the large fraction of 1A is only 100 million years right after the starburst, I think there might be a problem with how many white dwarfs. I mean, the notion that the way Chris was saying, I think that peak might be awfully high.
Otherwise, you need to power a lot of the.
You might need every white dwarf.
Yeah. Or you need to put too much mass in the star forming episode, because it can change the color of the galaxy. So that's true.
Peter.
Just a lame attempt to try to defend Dalin and Barris and Tonry. You mentioned that for core collapse, you want to raise that rate up using dust extinction. But you also said earlier, not that this is a Senate panel or something that could catch you on contradiction, that, that the dust or the prompt type 1As goes with the dust from core collapse you kind of expect if they're coming. So wouldn't you also want to correct the 1As more for dust? As well.
I mean, of course. So the problem is that we adopted a empirical calibrated model. So we look for the known type 1A supernovae. We see the distribution of absorption, and then we tune the average absorption in our model to reproduce the observation. What we need to be done is to distinguish galaxy type. We are putting an extinction correction which is the same for all the sample. Instead, we of course make a big difference from elliptical. But even like that, I think that even if you rise the extinction for type 1a, it would make things worse, because I think Dalang put a very small or any correction for extinction for the type 1a. So if you include even a correction for extinction there, you rise that up again.
And I also wanted to point out that there is a difference between Deris and Tanri and Dalin and the other searches, and that those were aimed at Z greater than
sure.
one supernovae. So in a sense, they go deeper than most of the other searches, and there's a possibility that if there is a dust difference, it could be finding more supernovae that are dust extincted compared to the lower redshift searches.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm not claiming that other data are correct, and it is a shame, let's say, for the community of one doing these things, which we don't know what the difference is. But what I found a bit annoying, let's say, is that if you find a disagreement with the data, which is comparable, you should try to figure out what is there. And I think having simply ignored what was done, which was the first attempt done with a lot of effort,
There's a tendency, though, and you see it in particle physics, that somebody makes a measurement and then somebody else makes a measurement and it comes very close to that one, and then you go along and then a theorist changes the theory and suddenly all the measurements make a jump. So sometimes it's dangerous.
No, it's really the observers who make very, very different measurements, and then theory figures out why that was correct. Right?
So should we try to wrap up?
I think we should. One quick question, which is this issue of the radio loud excess. Are those supernovae anyplace near the nucleus? Or?
No.
Okay.
Everywhere.
So next Friday we're going to have a discussion. Are you still here next Friday?
Yes.
Okay. So we're going to have a discussion on upcoming supernovae surveys, and I hope to. Are you going to use the telescope that's now?
I hope.
Okay, so maybe you could tell us on that Friday what your cadences will be and what depth you're going to with the telescope.
Sure.
Okay, thanks.